Today, as I said earlier, we mark the festival of Christ the King. It's a very new Christian festival, really. It was instituted by this bloke in 1925, Pope Pius XI, and was adopted by most Protestant churches who follow the common lectionary, the common cycle of readings, in the 1970s. It falls just before Advent starts, a time when we think about Jesus' original coming and his coming again at the end of time. Pius XI was given the difficult challenge of leading the Catholic Church between 1922 and 1939. He saw huge challenges in the world and tried his best to lead his church through them. At the start of his time as Pope, he saw the old empires of Europe fall apart. Empires which had existed for hundreds of years ended after the First World War. The Russian Empire became the Soviet Union. The Austro-Hungarian Empire and the Ottoman Empires broke up into their different countries. Germany struggled in the aftermath of war, and the policies of the victors in extracting payment for that war led, we now know, to a new war. In Mexico, the state persecuted the church bitterly. In Spain, the Republicans saw the church as a supporter of the monarchy and so persecuted it. In Russia, all Christians, not just Catholics, were persecuted under the communist regime. Pius denounced all this. He denounced totalitarian government, unrestrained capitalism, as well as communism. And so, of course, he was ignored by almost everybody. He complained about a conspiracy of silence in the face of his words. He was the Pope who made agreements with Mussolini's Italy and Hitler's Germany, believing wrongly that international agreements would protect Catholics. With Germany, we now know they weren't worth the paper they were written on. He wrote the only ever papal letter in German, the German title Mit Brennendersorge, with deep anxiety, condemned the way Hitler treated the Jews. The agreements with Italy, however, did lead to the Vatican as we now know it as an independent state. Next one, please. So in this context, with his reign as Pope, he faced much challenge in the world. Pius instituted this idea of Christ the King Sunday because he wanted to refocus the church away from the passing kingdoms and the mess of the world onto the eternal rule of Christ the King. We're meant to compare and contrast Jesus as King with the failures of human government and the changes brought about by war and human sinfulness. He wanted to remind people what true leadership, true government is all about. This desire to compare and contrast the failed human attempts to exercise power with the true power of Christ's kingship can be seen in the first reading from the book of the prophet Jeremiah that Joan read to us. In our first reading from Jeremiah, we read of Jeremiah's strong condemnation of the civic and religious leaders of Israel, whom he calls shepherds. He condemns them, sees them as letting down both people and God. The word shepherd here refers to the kings who have led the people astray and to their advisers. All the people we'd now label under the sort of catch-all phrase leader. Whilst we live in a kingdom, we don't think of the Queen as being responsible for the state of the country, either good or bad. There are very few absolute monarchies left, but at the time of Jeremiah, the normal pattern of human government was what we'd now call an absolute monarchy, probably not too different to what we'd see in the Gulf today. In Jeremiah's time, there were some limits on the king's power, notably the prophets, who reminded them of what faith says. But generally, the king ruled. Now, if we are dissatisfied with any of that lot, we can comfort ourselves with voting, staying up late on election night, and hopefully getting the result that we want, or the result which isn't as bad as we feared. This, of course, wasn't possible in Jeremiah's time. Leaders had more power and were consequently held to account only by God. The shepherds, the kings and their advisers, were representatives of God to the people. They were to lead, but they were also meant to serve. In adopting a monarchy, Israel held that whilst God was really the king, the earthly king was God's anointed, God's representative to them. But at the same time, the Jews felt the king had to be faithful to God, in tune with God's will, and he would face dire consequences if he wasn't. And every so often in Israel's history, kings were deposed because they'd led the people away from God. Jeremiah showed them what was wrong with their society. The rulers had scattered the sheep. Maybe the sheep have had to go into exile, like so many people in our world. Like so many rulers, the kings of the time didn't attend to the needs of the sheep, like many of our rulers now. Their kings were only interested in their own needs and interests, not the people they were called to serve. The rulers had done evil, like so many leaders in our own age who are more interested in power than service, who line their own pockets, who amass wealth at the expense of the poor. Jeremiah condemns the leaders of his own age and announces that God will act, that God will intervene. God will dwell in the midst of his people and be a truly righteous king. It's easy to read those words of Jeremiah and reflect on the leaders of the last century and some of our own leaders now and think that Jeremiah's words will be appropriate for them. Hitler, Stalin, Franco, Mussolini all savaged the sheep they were given to care for. Idi Amin, Colonel Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein, Ayatollah Khomeini, Robert Mugabe, to be topical, all proved Lord Acton's dictum correct. All power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. True leadership doesn't exhibit kingly behaviour through military might, arrogance, or political repression, but by being present with the people. This is where the Jeremiah passage ends, and St. Matthew's record of the Last Judgment becomes important. Over the last few weeks, we've been working through chapter 25 of Matthew's Gospel, until we arrive today at this famous talk about judgment, sheep, and goats. Jesus is portrayed in this passage as a judge, something we often forget. One day we'll have to give an account of how we have lived, a task even more difficult for those who have been called to lead. How will Mr. Mugabe fear, I wonder, when he gives an account in a place where there is no promised immunity and where there is no millions to protect him? How will the Lord judge those who have killed, maimed, and wounded his people? Some people don't like this festival of Christ the King. They object to all the kingly metaphors, the triumphalism they see within it, and the maleness of the title. Some even prefer to call it the Reign of Christ Sunday. I don't object, however, because I think the festival points us to a different type of power, a radical type of kingship, and a coming kingdom which is different to everything we've known before. The crucified king is coming back to reign. Those who have been downtrodden, oppressed, despised, tortured, and rejected will find a king who understands and shares their pain. They will share his kingdom. Those who have sided with the crucifiers will find their experience of the coming kingdom rather more difficult. Our knowledge of this coming kingdom impels us to live by its values now. We bear witness to the values of justice, love, inclusion and wholeness, which are part and parcel of what is to come. We stand for justice now. We bear witness to the God who demands fairness for all his children. And we live in this complicated state of being citizens of two kingdoms, the earthly countries and realms where we hold our citizenship, but also of the coming kingdom, which we watch and we wait for, and which we help bring about as we live by its precepts. In this way, we celebrate the fact that Christ is King every day of our lives, as we seek to live as committed disciples of our crucified King. Amen.